We'll call the meeting to order. We're gonna start with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
One note, silent moment.
Okay. So do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Does anybody? Oh, there's two sets. Okay, let's see. So this is for the June 13th meeting.
Oh,
it was a joint meeting. So we have to vote on both of them? Yes, okay. So, do we have any discussion? Any changes? No?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And then we do it again for the regular meeting? Okay, do I have a motion for approving the regular meetings?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Nope. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So, Dr. Roberts? Thank you for joining us.
A few things from the college. This is wrapping up my first year, and I'm feeling pretty good with the results. Enrollment for the summer, really, we did very well. We are up almost 20 FTE more than budget, which really kind of offset our entire deficit over the year. We came in budget just about 9,000 below what we estimated, which was compared to what we had anticipated at the end of the fall semester, which was a disaster. So we were able to do a couple significant things that really made big differences. So we're feeling really good about the budget, our strong fund balance. We're going to be going into the fall, which I was holding my breath, but it's going to turn out pretty good.
What is it?
John?
Well, the fund balance a year ago was 200-some-odd thousand. We added 302 to it. So you have that handout?
That's right.
Right there. It should be on the bottom of the page, exact number. Mm-hmm. It's 500 and...
Nice. Before that, it was even under 200.
Yeah.
125 or something like that. Right. I mean...
Yeah,
but the bottom, real bottom, where your hand is on the page is the number right now.
558.
268. And then for this month, we're probably going to, this year, we're probably not going to dip into it. Looks like we're going to make it through on budget. And according to a couple of things, one of the resolutions you're passing tonight for technology, we might even save more this year. The technology, when you get there, for us to buy our laptops and switches with capital saves our operating budget fantastically. I think Al's going to go through a meeting we had with the county regarding capital.
The capital project, we invited the county, and it was kind of a mutual agreement. And we sat down with their planners, their finance people, and we spent the entire Friday afternoon going through capital projects for upcoming year and talking about the way we process it. But at the end of it all, we walked the entire campus, and they could visualize what we were talking about in our proposals. They saw the doors and the windows and the bricks coming off the walls and the bridges falling apart. Mm-hmm. And real supportive and actually going up and beyond what we thought. They came up with some suggestions we hadn't thought about. We were looking just to put new windows in, and they suggested for make it a five-year plan. So you get your new ones, but you anticipate the next year you're going to need additional ones. And so it turned around our whole concept on how we're going to capital projects. With their support, I think we're going to be able to do entire facelift in the next 3 or 4 years. So I'm real excited about that. The fact that they're going to allow us to put the capital in for technology, which is huge for us. That's going to be such a savings over the years. Another area that we're going to save, I'd say $152,000 annually just in the technology bump. So real good, significant progress there. Feel really good about that. Enrollment's doing well. We've done a summary of major events, or projects that we've accomplished over the year. And we were just brainstorming one day, and John came up with a list. We have pretty close to 50 major things that we've changed in the last year. It's kind of shocking how many things, because when I first started, I said, well, I'm going to sit, observe, you know, maybe at 6 months or the year, we'll come back with some recommendations. But at the end of the year, literally 50 things are major, from reorganization to the cabinet, the whole campus, restructuring the way that we register students, deregistering students, the way that we do capital projects, the way we do the budgeting process, and it just goes on and on. And so I'm feeling really good. I think we had a team really worked well together. And obviously having John there as a kind of a mentor really certainly helped too.
Well, one of those changes goes right to summer school. We eliminated the prerequisites and other obstacles for non-matrix who were coming for the summer just for one course. They used to have to give transcripts and all this kind of stuff. And we did away with that. And I think that has a lot to do with our enrollment. We're making the courses more accessible rather than more difficult, especially if you're only visiting from Binghamton for the summer or something like that. And I think those little adjustments helped us in the spring, because we were only down about 5 or 8 FTEs from budget in the spring.
Now, do you advertise that when you do that?
I don't know that we advertise it more than internet. We don't put it in the paper or anything.
No, that's what I meant, but you do.
Yeah. But
streamline.
Streamline the registration process, especially for
registration for non-matriculated, right? Get your course and get out.
Right. What happens is...
No, I mean, that's going to be a pain, you know, having to go send back for your papers and all that stuff just to take an English course that they want to get out of the way.
But that's only one, I think. This is the first summer we had a payment plan. Mm-hmm. Used to be you had to pay up front because the summer was so short. So we put in a payment plan for summer. But the list, which it says has 50 things on it or more, because we're still counting, and it's little things like that.
They're really tightening so many things up that I've just, and it's not saying they were done wrong, they were just done comfortably over the years. Mm-hmm. They got set into the way that they did things. And you get fresh eyes and looking and question, and because virtually the entire cabinet's new. You know, me and John and Kevin Stoner and Chris and Lorraine, right. It's a whole new group. So we look at it with fresh eyes. We question things. The way I've seen it done before. Let's try this.
Another one is that we used to, in the spring, if you didn't pay a week before classes, we'd kick you out. And then 60% of those people came back and re-registered. Well, this year we didn't kick them out. We only kicked out the people who didn't come the first week. Because if they're not going and they didn't pay, who cares? But if they're attending, we send them a bill. We find out what the problem is. But instead of kicking them out, make 60% come back and re-register. You've turned a few off that are not coming back.
Mm-hmm. Well, they don't get the same schedule. They plan a schedule, and you drop them, and they have to come back and
try to
re-register.
Rebuild the schedule.
And it could be all different hours and times.
So it's just tweaking the process here.
I just have a question about the former strategic plan. Do you, since Don Cott had presided over that, have you change things? Are you developing new goals?
Or what was interesting was the strategic plan that Don brought for us was at such a high level. Mm-hmm. There was 8 categories and they set arbitrary goals. Now, each one of those categories are sufficient. You know, there was nothing wrong with them. Enrollment, retention, mm-hmm. Fund balance, things that I can support. Mm-hmm. The whole part of the heart and soul of the plan wasn't there. So it really gave me the opportunity to put together the plan. I had no objection. I retweaked what the goal number was, mm-hmm. but actually building the plan was something we just did this fall. In the spring, we starting to implement it, and then we're setting benchmarks right now. So in the fall, we'll be able to monitor that closely.
Another important thing for the year is that Middle States is coming next year, so we're doing our self-study. So a lot of time and energy is devoted to write that report.
Right.
And it's just about ready. I think we'll have it ready early in the fall.
Mid-September we'll have a report. We'll have a visit.
The chair
will come up.
But that takes a lot of work.
It's huge.
If you're lucky, you only do it every 5 years. And if you're really lucky, you don't have to have a visit every 10 years, because in 5 years, they just ask for a report. It's not really lucky. it's skill and you're doing the right thing. But the goal is to strive for a 10-year one where you don't have anything there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can jump through these hoops sometimes. Right?
The last time they had a problem, so they came back in a year or two. And so we hope to get out of that cycle and get into the longer approval rate.
And those are reports that we can see if they can be available.
Yes. Our self-study will be available to the community online. It's a requirement. You have to be able to show
As well as the strategic plan, which is just about being wrapped up.
So you're finishing up the other one. They created sort of the framework for the strategic plan.
Exactly.
You're actually
It's time to do another one with the new cabinet and the new leadership. But there's no time to do it before Middle States came, so to rush into it and try to start all over again. But, you know, maybe in a year or so, once you get past Middle States, time to do another one of those that they did in 2014. It's the last time they did it. So by the time we do it again, it'll be 18 or 19, which it's due anyway.
Thank you.
So we have some resolutions for them?
One is, we talked about technology. The other one is the lease for the BRC, and that we've moved out of there substantially, so the lease payments have come down quite a bit.
So basically, resolutions 333 and 335 and 337 are all yours.
I thought there was two.
There's the technology lease. And the lease.
333 is Office of Aging.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
We have two. And the lease, we're not staying much longer. We're working with the county because they want to move the court in and stuff like that. So it probably will not go that full year to December 2000.
And the reality is we don't really need that location. You know, I'm working with Paul, who's the superintendent, you know, and most of the things we do in the evening at the BRC, work in agreement with him so we can use a high school. So we're going to be located, the major staff will be at the Kingston Center. And any additional classrooms, we have the entire high school wide open for us. So it's going to be much more centralized. It's going to be a lot less expensive. We save the rent. Just the internet expense that we're paying in addition to the $77,000, it's $2,000 a month. It's just insane.
The other question is where the Small Business Development Center is going. Because they want it closer to the one stop. We have to work that out.
All right, so the resolution is 335 and 337 are theirs then.
So we'll move resolution 335?
Yeah, I'll move the resolutions that, you know, take them out of order if you don't mind.
Yeah.
For them. I'll move resolution 335, establishing the capital project, 41 technology facility upgrades.
Okay, do we have a second?
No, I'll second that.
Okay, any discussion? No, all in favor? Okay, approved unanimously.
I'll move resolution 337.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
And what is the? Let me ask you a question. I didn't read through this. The lease payment right now is going to be changed to 77.
That was the annual. That was started from January to go to January.
That'll be the new one, the 77. Wasn't it 90 before?
Yeah. And we've actually come down in square footage to about 6,000 square feet.
Right.
We used to have the whole center. And in that 6,000, 1,500 is the SBDC. So we're using 4,800. We're not using a lot of space there.
Oh, the SBDC is yours too.
Yeah. It is. But it's an independent, a lot of it's grant funded. But it could be anywhere. Al's got experience with it. It's a matter of where they want it, especially if they need the space in court, whatever.
Right. People seek out that. It's not something they...
It's mobile. Really, a good SBDC has one office at the campus, and then it's an office here. It could be in this building. It could be at the courthouse. It could be any place. So that's generally the way they operate.
All righty. Well, then...
Any other discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved? Thank you.
We're done?
I think you're done.
After a year, thank you for your support. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
You guys have been great. Appreciate
thank
it.
You for doing what you do.
Thank you.
And happy anniversary.
Yes, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay. So, Lee?
Well, we're in the midst of the summer season, and working with the agriculture stuff, doing a lot of work with small grains and mulching barley, and there are bags of all kinds of stuff in my office that folks are buying, and then I guess they're going to see what works best with what craft beer or whatever, but it's very exciting. A lot of interest in it, not only from growers in Ulster County, but the surrounding area as well. Sorry. Okay. So we've had some interesting things going on. I got a call about a month and a half ago from the State Office of Children, Office of Children and Families. I've never had a call like this before. It was really very unusual, saying, you know, you guys applied for a grant last year. This was for our Relatives as Parents program. And you placed fourth, and you funded the top three. I said, yeah, I know that. It was a five-year grant, $80,000 a year, is what we did ask for. And, but we didn't get the grant, so of course we set it aside, didn't think much about it. And anyway, this call was telling me that they had additional funding and were we still interested in the last 4 years at $100,000 a year. I said, well, let me think about that. But now we're scrambling trying to put together the program because, of course, not knowing it starts September 1st and not having a whole lot of time to put together, you know, we had to completely change.
What is the program again?
The Relatives as Parents program, kinship care, actually, I think is what it's called on the state level. We call it the Relatives as Parents program. Right, so it's providing it's like support and education.
Grandmothers and things like
grandmothers, that. Grandmothers, aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters who find themselves raising their relatives. Tough for those kids. I don't think people realize really all the things that they go through. And then a lot of the relatives don't ask for, don't go through social services, don't go for help. They don't want to lose the kids. They're afraid of, you know,
right.
scrutiny and whatever. So we are not regulatory in any way. I mean, we obviously, if we thought that there was child abuse or whatever, would report that. But what we do is we're sort of a safe haven for folks where they can come and get information. We can connect them to lawyers. We can connect them to
services. Now, would you be a mandated reporter?
Oh, really?
We're not mandated reporters. Because we don't provide those kinds of services.
I didn't realize that. Because yeah. I was just looking for help for somebody, and I was trying to go through
DRC?
CASA.
Dispute resolution.
But that's a different...
CASA
it's a
works
different.
With us. CASA gets a lot of those cases out of family yeah. court and whatever, so they refer a lot of folks to us and whatever. And what we're going to be able to do now with this additional money is that the program's been small. We have, I think, about 60 families that we're working with. We work, provide education and programs for adults and also for the children. So it's a kind of a two-pronged program. This is going to allow us to really expand it and then reach more folks. It's a hard population to reach. The folks that are from underrepresented groups and whatever, they don't have a whole lot of trust in many of the services that are provided in government and whatever. So we have found that reaching them has been really difficult because if we're handing out free stuff, when we do the backpacks and that kind of stuff, we see them. But to get them to come for the education part has been difficult. This is going to allow us to bring more incentives in to get people to come and whatever. I would say we have some phenomenal success stories of children who've been in the program for 4 or 5 years of what they've been able to accomplish. We just sent three of them to, they worked at the milkshake booth at the fair to raise, through Teen Council, and raised money for scholarships so that they could go to the Career Explorations Program at Cornell University. So we were able to send three.
Is that what the baskets were for Christmas time that you're raising money for also? They made the baskets?
Some of
that was a different program.
That was for a different program. That was for a nutrition program. So anyway, we're really excited about this, and really kind of out of the blue. I very rarely do I get those kinds of calls. Yes. So we're humming right along. We're putting together that program and whatever, but we will be doing a lot more outreach. This is going to allow us to do that, and that's been part of the problems. You know, we've worked with the schools, we've worked with guidance counselors and whatever, but it has to be really ongoing. You know, you mm-hmm. can go to a meeting and talk about the program and say, hey, we've got this, and they would say, wow, that's great. And 2 days later, they're embroiled in other things and whatever, might be the guidance counselor, might be the one of the teachers or whatever, and they don't remember it. So it's got to be ongoing. And so that's what we're going to be doing as part of this to make sure that folks know that it's aware. It's really a very underreported program, underreported problem. People don't talk much about it. Mm-hmm. The kids really don't want to talk about it. Most of them have parents that are incarcerated. So it's
And sometimes it's informal, so they really don't want people to know.
They don't want people to know.
Yeah,
right.
And a lot of the kids or folks are incapacitated by drugs. Mm-hmm. And so again, so they might not be in jail, but nobody wants to talk about this. The mm-hmm. grandparents are feeling like they didn't succeed the first time, and now they're back again. And you know, we've got 60 and 70 year olds. You know, I'm 60 now, and I have grandchildren. And I know how happy I am when I love to have them, but I'm kind of happy at the end of the day when
they
go home. If I had to raise them and go through that whole thing again. So we provide education. We provide a lot of parenting support, parenting classes. We provide some respite for them so they get a break from the kids every now and then, because that's really kind of important as well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we're really excited about this. And not only that, but we started this program with funding from Brookdale, which is out of Colorado, which is specifically for kinship care, relatives as parents program, and they had funding. And that funding ended about 3 years ago. They kept going, but they weren't funding programs. They provided a lot of information and seminars and those kinds of things. And we just got word this year that they had money again for folks they had previously funded. So we just wrote a $15,000 grant to them. And we also get Dyson money. That's how we've been running the program, is with Dyson. From across the river. They don't generally fund these kinds of programs more than 2 or 3 years, but they did this one because we had money from the state through a kinship care program that ended, and you know, so that we could keep going with the kids, they provided support for that. So we're also going to branch out into a lot more parenting kinds of things that we'll offer not only to the RAP families, but also to underrepresented groups and whatever. And hopefully we'll be able to provide a lot more information on that.
So my district in Kingston has almost every unit of public housing in the city of Kingston, and I guess you could say that goes for Ulster County somewhat. Mm. And in campaigning, I probably met a third of the families were this kind of family. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if there's some way that we could talk about,
sure,
offline, about reaching those families.
Sure,
a lot
absolutely.
Of them would like that kind of help. They have adopted their children, or they're in the process of doing mm-hmm. that, their grandchildren or whatever, and would definitely benefit
sure.
from help. Also, the kids who go to my son's school are in the same boat. He did go to GW.
Great.
A lot of them are.
I know we do, yeah.
So Val
yeah.
Hannah.
Most great. Of the families we're working with are from Kingston.
Right.
We also have some outreach in Ellenville. We tried New Paltz, and we weren't very successful in New Paltz. Ellenville, we were more successful in Kingston, of course, you know, it's got a population. So yeah, I'd love to talk
happy
to you about
to.
That.
And so you have 60 people now.
We have about 60 families that we work
60
with.
Families. So how much would this funding allow you to reach?
Well, we'll see. And out of that 60, not all of them are constant.
Right.
You know, there's a core group of
right.
folks who come and, you know, to everything and whatever. The others sort of come and go. They cherry pick things. What this is going to allow us to do is to do a lot more, offer a lot more programs. Hopefully that will pique their interest and have them come. I mean, we love to have them come on a consistent basis. But we find that even in our nutrition programs, we have one nutrition program, expanded food nutrition program, that we've been running for 30 or 40 years. And that particular program is with... I think people are 200% of poverty and families, but trying to get folks to come, 6 lessons, and that's the way the feds have got this set up and whatever, trying to get folks to come for 6 lessons, difficult.
Jamal's trying.
He is, and he's had some success.
I bet.
Our other program,
Jamal, that's someone that works
Jamal Sanders, he's
yeah.
one of our nutrition educators in that program. And then one of our other nutrition programs, which is for folks
yes.
who are on food stamps or eligible for food stamps, which is the SNAP Ed program, which runs through the feds and the state. It's all USDA money. I don't understand why there's two, but whatever. I just we get the charge, we do what we need to do. And that program, we are running regionally, but I have somebody in my own office who works with a lot of the groups around here and does farmers markets and whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, they just told her that they don't want to do farmers markets anymore because there's not enough low-income folks coming. You know, most of the, you look at Kingston, it's getting pretty up, those farmers markets are getting pretty upscale. So, yeah. But be that as it may, we're trying to work those things out. She can do things on a one-to-one basis. She can just go out and do one shot and whatever. What we find in the education field, for those of you that are teachers and whatever, one-shot deals are good. They raise awareness. But if you're looking for behavioral change, like we are in nutrition, you know, where you really want people to understand how to run their finances so that they have money at the end of the month so they can still feed their children, you know, that cooking, being able to cook at home can save you incredible amounts of money, and the food is so much better than you get from fast food places. But again, getting folks to make the commitment to come. And we're dealing with people who don't know how to cook. They don't know how to boil water. I'm amazed. I grew up in a very different kind of household, where you just started really young, you know, helping with the cooking or whatever. And then my mother put me into 4-H so I would learn the right way to do it. But we're talking about adults that have never had the opportunity to learn those skills. So that's those programs that we do are teaching basic skills, basic financing and whatever. So I'm trying to trust your food dollar. They're very popular. We'd love to reach more people. Again, it's getting folks to make the commitment to come. They might come for one. If we go to where they are, sometimes it's easier. The group stuff, if they're already at a place, like in a public housing place or whatever, we do a lot of that.
That's great.
And if we can do that, that's so much easier because folks tend to come to that. Otherwise, transportation's a problem, and child care's a problem.
Right.
So, but we work on those issues as well.
Great. Actually, I want to get in touch with Jamal because I'm going to be doing a pro bono advisor for a CDBG project in Midtown where we're surveying residents about the quality of life issues, and we would like to photograph them, and I hear he's a good photographer.
Could be.
You didn't know that.
His wife has what is it called? Zodial or something, photography.
But that would probably be a good opportunity for him because he might be able to pick up some clients that way.
Right, getting to know people. Part of what we're doing is, if you remember, but 2 years ago, REPCO did the community impact measures study, and so we're doing it again, but we're hiring 25 kids, so that's where I'm just volunteering to oversee the kids. And so part of doing that last time was asking them about food deserts. Do you remember that?
I certainly do. And then the food desert thing kind of lost its luster. Now they don't want to call it food deserts anymore. Okay. But we do want to make sure that people have access to fresh local food, and we certainly have enough of it around here.
Yeah.
So be happy to work with you.
Good. I'll CC you when I reach out.
And then our 4-H youth development program is in the throes of getting ready for fair. So hopefully we'll see.
What's the date of the fair?
I think it's August 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th. It runs from Tuesday with car night. The opening ceremonies are Wednesday. I'm sure you all got invitations. And it runs through Sunday. And we'll have our traditional educational kinds of things going on in the youth building. The master gardeners will be there, et cetera. And, of course, all the kids with their exhibits and their animals. 4-H program's been burgeoning.
Great.
It's bigger than it's been for the past 10 years. And I tell the staff, it's the toughest program I have to fund. We use a lot of county dollars to fund that. The scant county dollars that we get go to ag and 4-H. All of the family consumer science programs are funded with grants and contracts. A lot of ag is funded with grants and contracts, but we still have to contribute a significant amount of dollars and 4-H as well. But that's a tough program to raise money for the traditional club program. So we try to do it other ways. We try to find ways. We have a couple of mentoring grants that are going on right now with two schools in Kingston, and the two middle schools and one middle school in Ellenville, where we train volunteers to work with kids with STEM topics. So it works. It's a tough thing to do, but it's been working really well. Those kids have been on field trips, and they went to the 3D lab at SUNY, at SUNY New Paltz, and made all kinds of neat things and worked with robots and whatever, and so that we do get a grant for. But it's not enough money to really do it the way we should do it, and that's part of the problem. So we struggle with some of the grants and contracts that we have. And that one is run through, the money comes in through Cornell University. Cornell takes 26% for overhead, and so that comes out of direct services that we would be able to do. Education, we don't do service. So we were just talking about today, I'm going to pull out a program. And it's a killer. It's like, this is what we need, this is what we need to be doing. So anyway, we're always on the out, looking for dollars for that. But the club program, the staff that I have has done a phenomenal job of training adults and whatever. And again, the numbers are the highest that they've been in, I'd say, 10 or 15 years. So you should see some really nice displays at the fair and some really interesting kids.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. So we have resolution number 333, amending the 2016 Ulster County budget to include additional funding from the New York State Office of the Aging.
No, move it.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? No? Okay.
Actually, I do have a question.
Okay.
I wonder if there's a way in the future, you know, being new to this, it would be nice if the departments would be willing, as part of the sending the information, just a link to whatever program it is so we can read
right.
the background.
And I invited them to be here tonight, but she's on vacation.
But even just in allowing us to prepare, because I always read in advance, and I prefer to read, I mean, it's all public information, I would prefer to read a link to their program description or their budget. It doesn't have to be like 5,000 sheets of paper. It could just be a link to the file that they're willing to share with us.
Right.
Because I always feel comfortable. I know that these are allocations in the budget, but I feel like I'd like to be able to ask questions or know what they're about.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not like we're asking the staff here, the legislature staff.
Right.
We're asking the department staff to provide a link to something that gives us the background.
Right.
Yeah, and I believe we can probably get that right through our own staff.
It's part of a larger communications policy that actually Mary Beth brought up in her speech, which is that we shouldn't necessarily have to ask department heads for the things that are basic or get them the day before. But just really have a flow of information about stuff that, I mean, we're not supposed to be foiling them.
That's something we can ask for, too, because when Nettie is setting up the agenda and everything, she invites or whatever, and she can ask for links when she has the resolutions.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. So, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Approved. Okay, resolution 334, approving the New York State Office of Children and Family Services 2016 Resource Allocation Plan.
I'll move it.
And we have a second?
Second, of course.
Any discussion? No?
Thank
all?
You. Great.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. So that's it for the resolution. Don't believe we have any old business. Any new business? No? Okay, do we have a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second it.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned
that
you got the email from Nettie about the presentation next week. That you two
I saw that I got one from her, but I didn't read it yet.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to meet you.
What is it?
So I invited Deborah Meyer-Dewan and Colette Ruoff, who have worked together on this Sage Arts Elders Voices program, to present that at the legislature because it's just amazing. They did essentially singer-songwriters met with the farmers who are over 70 in the Longmont Valley Growers Association every week for months, and then they wrote songs about them. And they presented them in a beautiful concert, and now they're in the same Woodstock. And I love the idea of the connection between our like long-term heritage and this new artistic impulse to document it. So I thought it would be great. Mark Brown, who's one of my constituents, did the most beautiful song, and it was about Schoonmaker. It's his first name. Shoemaker, you know, the...
Now you can't come up with an idea.
Alice and, you know, Alice Shoemaker. What's her husband's name?
It's coming.
Anyway, so they, I hope, will also be here. And so the presentation is simply explaining what that program, what they did. And then...
Are they going to sing the song?
They'll be singing one song.
Good.
Yeah. And, I mean, Mark will sing the song. And he's a really talented songwriter. And Deborah Meyer DeWan and Colette will explain the project. And Colette is now working on it at Woodstock, and they're going to be presenting one about older artists at Bearsville Theater this Sunday. So I'll send out an email letting people know about it. I just think, you know, if there's another project that legislators have in mind to celebrate the heritage of their area, it's something that they could bring to this project. So you two are the presenters.
Sorry.
That's why you two have been chosen by Ken Ronk as the presenters. I'll introduce it, and you guys will present the Pride Awards.
Okay, great.
Okay. His son is Dan. He writes a stamp.
Yes, I do.